Imagine for a moment, the government does a study on 600 men without telling any of them. The men are sick, and the government knows it, but they don't tell any of them. When a cure becomes available, it's never offered to the men. Instead, they are left to live, or die, with their illness. This isn't some twisted plot of the Twilight Zone. No. These are the harsh realities of the Tuskegee experiment that went on for 40 entire years during the 20th century. In this episode, I'm going to cover the gut-wrenching experiment that ultimately changed the way studies would be done forever. I'm your host, Rachel Payton, and you're listening to the Chronicles of Time. In the late 1920s, the United States Public Health Services, or the USPHS, were in Alabama conducting studies to determine the presence of syphilis among African Americans and prospecting a treatment for it. The USPHS surveyed six counties, and Macon County had the highest rate of syphilis, with a shocking 36% of the African American population in the county having the disease. The studies begin, but quickly come to an end. Due to the Great Depression, the funding was no longer there for mass treatment. The USPHS now saw this as an opportunity to do a study over untreated syphilis. They partnered with the Tuskegee Institute in 1932 to begin the study. Originally, it was only supposed to last 6 months, but it would ultimately span over 40 years. The USPHS needed participants, but they knew they would have to incentivize somehow. They promised free medical care, hot meals, rides to and from, and burial services. Most of the 600 men were poor sharecroppers who had never been to the doctor, and every single one of the men were black. 399 of them had latent syphilis, or syphilis that is existing but has not fully developed. The other 201 men did not have the disease. But here's the thing. Out of all the men, not one of them were told they had syphilis, an extremely contagious disease, by the USPHS. So why did they think they were in a study? Well, the men were being told they were being treated for bad blood, a term that could refer to a number of things, from headaches to fatigue. The doctors treating the men were, of course, white. Informed consent was never collected because it was simply not a thing back then. All bets were off. The doctors had virtually nothing stopping them. What they were trying to see, at whatever risk, is how the body is affected by syphilis without any medication. The men would get blood drawn and spinal taps done, which would leave them bedridden for weeks at a time. But somehow, some way, the doctors would manipulate the situation. This is a letter sent to a participant regarding a spinal tap. Some time ago, you were given a thorough examination, and since that time, we have gotten a great deal of treatment for bad blood. You will be given your last chance to get a second examination. This examination is a very special one, and after it is finished, you will be given a special treatment if it is believed you are in a condition to stand it. Remember, this is your last chance for special free treatment. I mean, who wouldn't want to do something so special? I mean, painful. This letter is a prime example on how the doctors were misconstruing the entire situation. In the early 1940s, penicillin became known as the cure for syphilis. Instead of giving the cure to the men, the doctors instead withheld the drug to study the effects of the disease's entire progress on the body. Some effects were men going blind, deaf, getting heart disease, and losing control over their nervous system. And what was the doctor's ultimate goal? It's simple, to see the men die. To study them as if they were lab rats and not humans. If the men tried going to another doctor, the doctor that they would go to would encourage them to go back to the USPHS. But how did these doctors know about the men in the study? Well, the Public Health Service ensured to cover all of its bases. Lists with the men's name in the study was sent around to local doctors, asking them not to treat the men and to refer them back to them. But the heartbreaking part is that most of these men believe they already had a good doctor treating them at the USPHS, so why even see anyone else? Finally, someone with morality came along. The 27-year-old social worker, Peter Buxton joined the Public Health Service in 1965. His job was to interview patients with sexually transmitted diseases, and throughout his work, he discovered the Tuskegee experiments from co-workers. He was absolutely horrified and shell-shocked and couldn't believe that this was actually happening. He would file a protest on ethical grounds that would go on to be rejected on grounds that the study wasn't complete yet. A few years later, he filed another protest that was once again rejected. He had tried to do what he could twice, but he was left with no option. He was going to the press. The story broke in July of 1972 with the Associated Press running the shocking news. During the 40 years of the study, 128 patients died of syphilis or its complications, 40 wives were infected, and 19 children as well. This could have all been avoided had the doctors informed the men of their illness. A panel was set up after the story broke that put a stop to the study. In 1974, Congress passed the National Research Act, which prevents human experimentation. This was a direct impact of the Tuskegee experiments. A settlement for $10 million would also be settled that year. Each living survivor of the study received nearly $40,000 in free medical treatment for life. But if I was a survivor and was offered medical treatment, I think it would be an exceptionally hard pass. And that brings me to my next point. The study has caused years and years of distrust in the medical field among Black Americans. It has led to overall worse health conditions for particularly Black men due to the weariness and avoidance of doctors. Years later, we still see racism in the medical field, and Tuskegee paved the way for that to be accepted. I would love to sit here and tell you that every doctor and nurse involved went to prison, but not a single person was ever held liable for this heinous study. It wasn't even until 1997 when a formal apology was issued by the government by President Bill Clinton. In his speech, Clinton said to the victims, "The United States government did something that was wrong, deeply, profoundly, morally wrong. It was an outrage to our commitment to integrity and equality for all of our citizens." In 2004, the last survivor of the study would pass away at the age of 96. To me, the craziest part of all this is how recent it is. This could have and did happen to someone's grandparent. It's so belligerently wrong on so many levels, and for it to have continued for 40 years is beyond me. What is under our nose that we don't know about right now? I'm genuinely scared to find out. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of The Chronicles of Time. I got this idea from a good friend of mine, Jerrica Eaton, and I just wanted to say thank you so much for the great idea. If you like this episode, please leave me a rating and review and tell all your friends about the show. If you want to talk history or have any episode suggestions, email me at thechroniclesoftimepodcast@gmail.com. Don't forget to follow all my social media pages, follow my Instagram and Facebook, and my TikTok if you want some updates on the show. Thank you so much for listening to this episode on the Tuskegee experiments. I'm your host, Rachel Payton, and this has been The Chronicles of Time.